So the Mishnah says, Dini Mamanos Beshlosha. Now the Mishnah wants to know, how many Dayanim do we need for monetary cases, monetary disputes? So the answer to the Mishnah is Shlosha. We need three judges on the court. Zelos Mechavolos Beshlosha. In a case of theft, which is already criminal action, we need Shlosha. Chavolos means if somebody beats up somebody else, he has to pay Chavolos. So Rashi says, what's Gzelos? Kofer b'pikadon. For example, if let's say I ask you to be a shomer, to watch something, and when it comes time for you to return it to me, because I deposited it in your hands, you deny that you ever got it. So in such a case, Rashi says that the person took the shomer took it for himself. He took it for himself and he used it. And from the moment that he uses the object, which is called shlichus yad b'pikadon, he's a gazlan. He's a thief. So therefore, according to Rashi's pshat, at what point does the shomer become a gazlan? The moment he uses the object after he denied that he received it from someone else. He's claiming that it's his own object and he uses it. Then he's a gazlan. Pinyon, how are you? Okay. So tonight we're learning a little bit of Sanhedrin. I photocopied a page for you. And the Mishnah starts by saying that there's a category called Dini Mominus, and then there's a category called Gzelos. And Rashi identifies Gzela as a case of Kofer b'pikadon v'sholeach b'yad. Right, so let's say he denies that he ever got the object, he says it's his. You know, the mafkid is suing him in Bezin, says that's my object, I gave it to you. Give it back. And he says, no, that's mine. I used it and I enjoyed it. It's mine. I never got it from you. So Rashi says, in such a case, he's a gazlan. Okay. Now, the Mishnah is broken up into parts. And in certain cases, we need three judges to form a Beis Din. In other cases, we need 23 judges. And finally, in certain cases, we need what's called a Sanhedrin Agdola, the High Court, which is made up of 71 judges. So, for example, at what point do you need 23 judges? So, according to Rabbi Shmuel, we're going to need 23 judges for Malkus. So if a person violated Shatnez or any other law in the Torah Yed Chazer and they warned him and he violates the Hasra, so the two witnesses to testify against him, he's Chayev 39 Malkus, he will be judged in front of a Beis Din of 23. That's according to Rabbi Shmuel. Then we have another case of Sharan Niskal. So you have a shor that killed he gored three different people and he killed three people, and now we can judge him to be stoned. So in such a case, you require 23 you require a Beis Din that's made up of 23 judges.
So what happens to the balim in that case? So the shor is down three times?
So as far as the Baalim is concerned, they're only chayav compensation. So that would be Dini Mominus. So we can judge them in front of three. But as far as the Shor is concerned, the Shor requires 23 judges to be put to death, in order to put it to death. Then Dini Nefashos, if you have a capital crime, be Esrim Ushlosha, you need 23 judges. So any capital crime, for example, if a man kills someone, that murder trial would be Dine Nefashos. Also, there are other avarice of immorality that are also capital crimes, like for example Rovea Nirva, which is Mishkav Zohar, or for example certain arayas, like a man who has relations with his own daughter, he's chayav misa. So in many cases, we're going to need 23 judges. Now the case of nirv includes a woman who is nirva to a behema. She also needs 23 judges. And those are cases where you need a bezdin of chaf gimel. Now at what point do you need a bezdin of ayin aleph, the highest bezdin in the land? So that's a case of donin es hashevet. What's donin es hashevet? Let's say a certain tribe in Israel was guilty of avodah zara. If we could prove that city, most of its inhabitants worshipped avodah zara, then we judge the city as an ir anidachas. Say it again one more time.
Would that be a case of Shevet Binyamin and Shoftim?
You mean about Pilegish Begiva? Yeah. That's what you're referring to? I'm not sure. I don't know. I'd have to study that. All right. Now we have a case of a Navi Sheker. It means he testified, he prophesied, but it really wasn't true prophecy. So in such a case, we judge him to death, but we need a bezdin of 23. Then we have a case of a kohen gadol. Then, in order for the people of Israel to go out to battle, we need a bezdin of ayin aleph of 71 judges to decide that we have to go out to milchama. But the Mishnah differentiates between a milchemes rishus and a milchemes mitzvah, chova. If it's a milchemes rishus, we need a bezdin of shivim v'echad. So that's the breakdown of the Mishnah. So we have certain cases where we need a bezdin of 3 and no more than 3. In other cases, we need a bezdin of 23. And finally, in certain cases, we have to go to the High Court of Israel, and then we require a bezdin of ayin aleph. Okay, now, what exactly is the function of bezdin? First of all, we need two witnesses. Two witnesses have to come and testify in front of a bezdin. If two witnesses testify outside of a bezdin, that's not called edus. Then we need, after the bezdin receives the edim and they interrogate them, we need what's called a gemara din. They have to issue a verdict. So basically, the judges have a double function. Number one, they have to establish the evidence. And number two, based on the evidence, they have to issue a final verdict. They have to issue a ruling. Okay. So let's take a look at this first piece on Masechta Sanhedrin in the Gvuras Yitzchak. You may remember that when we learned Masechta Megillah in the good old days. No, his name is Sarutskin. So he has a chiddush here from Rav Chaim Brisker. Where did he get this from? He got it from Rav Baruch Ber in the name of Rav Chaim. Rav Baruch Ber, he was Rosh Yeshivat Kamenetz, but he was a student in Brisk of Rav Chaim. And a lot of the Torah that Rav Baruch Ber published it is in the name, he quotes his Rebbe, Rav Chaim. So he asks the following question. We have a principle called Dover Sheba Erva. And what that means is that we have to sometimes establish, based on testimony, that a certain woman is considered an Erva. For example, let's say we don't know if this woman was married or not married. So we need two witnesses to testify that she was married. How do we know that we need two witnesses? Maybe one witness should be enough. So that's called a gzeira shavah, dover dover mimama. that just like it says in the parsha. Excellent. Al pishnai medim yakum davar, and that's referring to mammon. And then the word davar also appears in the parsha of erev. So we have gzeir shavim davar davmi mammon. Now, with regard to a davar shavim mammon, we need a psak din of the bezdin. But Reb Chaim wasn't sure whether or not we need a psak din of bezdin in the case of a davar shavim erevah. Perhaps the gzeir shavim of davar davmi mammon is limited to the two witnesses. We need two witnesses. How do we know you need two witnesses in the case of an erevah, the status of a woman? We derive it davar davmi mammon. Oh, he says the other possibility is that even le'inyan psak din, in order to issue a final verdict, it's not enough that the judges will receive the eidim, but in order to give their ruling and determine and establish that this woman is a davar shavim erevah, we need a bezdin. We need a gemar din. They have to issue a ruling. So again, this was Reb Chaim's suffix. He vacillated back and forth about the scope of davar davar mimon. How far does it go? Is it only as far as the Kabbalah's Eidus is concerned, that we need two witnesses? Or does it go even as far as the Gemara Din, that we need a Bezdin, just like in Momonos we need a Bezdin, so too in Davar Shavera, to determine the status of a woman, we need a Gemara Din in front of, which is issued by Bezdin. So the Gvuras Yitzchak wants to come to some conclusion based on our Mishnah. Why? Because the Mishnah omits any mention of davar shavim erevah. In other words, the Mishnah goes through all the cases where Bezdin is going to have to determine the case. They'll determine the law, the final verdict. And it breaks down into Gimel, Chaf Gimel, Ayin Aleph. Why didn't the Mishnah mention the case of a davar shavim erevah, that we need a Bezdin? And then tell us that a bezdin of three is enough. Hare nira, it would seem from the omission of the mission of Dovrish Be'erva, did Dovrish Be'erva lo tzarech gmar din upsak bezdin. In other words, what's common to everything in every case that's listed in that Mishnah is that you need a bezdin for a gmar din, for a psak bezdin. They have to issue the final verdict. In the case of erva, all they need is to receive the edim. And then Mamela, automatically, once the Eidus has been verified, she's an Erva, she's an Eish HaSish. I don't need a Gemar or a Psak Bezdin for that.
So Chavsa says, since it's not mentioned in the Mishnah, we don't need a Gzera Shava?
No. Well, the Gzera Shava is only as far as Eidim is concerned. Uh-huh. So we need a Bezdin to accept the Eidim, that's for sure. And we're going to need two witnesses.
But Mardin is not...
But at that point, once the Bezdin receives the two Edim that testify that we were at the marriage ceremony, we know that she received Kiddushin, at that point she becomes an Erev of Eish HaSish. I don't need a separate Psak of Bezdin for that. So could you imagine a situation where immediately after the Bezdin received the Edim and verified its reliability, immediately thereafter, the Bezdin flew up to, I don't know where, they dissipated it in thin air. So he's saying that would be enough to determine that she's a davar shavim erevah. It's not like all the cases in that Mishnah where Bezdin plays a double role. They not only weigh the evidence, but they also have to issue a psak din. And he quotes a tshuva of Rabbi Kiveger, who says that it's a davar pashut. He never entertained any other possibility. Davar shavim erevah lo tzarech gmar din. Oh, Moshe, how are you? I saw you call me, I just didn't get a chance to call you back.
I am very busy.
Yeah, I just got off the plane just 48 hours ago, so I'm trying to...
I got off the plane a week ago.
Yeah, all right, I'm trying to, you know, organize my schedule.
I don't know.
Wait, so let me just finish. I don't want to get off on a tangent because I'm going to lose the trend. Yeah, there should be another page over there you can give Moshe. And he says that it was a davar pashut, that a davar shavim erevah doesn't need a gemar din and a psak bezdin. So that all Beis Din, the only role that Beis Din plays is to receive the witnesses. And that's it. It seems to me, therefore the Mishnah omits mention of a Darvish Be'erva. The Rak Shana, what's listed in that Mishnah? Only those things that require a Gmar Din, that Beis Din issue its final verdict. And I'll prove it to you, he says, from a Tosis in Sota. Tosis in Sota wonders, why does the Mishnah omit Hashkaas Sota v'Zakein Mamre? So Tosis says that the Hanach Tetzrichim Beis Din Shalayin after Gmar Din Shal Sota v'Zakein Mamre Lo Tzarech Beis Din Shal Shivim V'Yechad. The Mishnah Lotana Rak Hanach Dinim Shapsak Din Tzarech Beis Din Shalayin Aleph. So once again, in the case of Sota, Beis Din is going to play a role. They're going to weigh the evidence and determine that this woman is a Sota. Then they will oversee the process of Hashkaas Mei Sota. But that's all. Immediately afterwards, she's a Sota. In the case of Zakein Mamre, which is the rebellious member of the elder of the court, they have to weigh the evidence and determine that he is a Zakein Mamre. But Tosa says these cases are not listed in the Mishnah, because we don't need a psak of Beis Din. Once the evidence has been clarified by Beis Din, they received the Edim and they accepted the Edim after interrogation, they decided that this woman is a Sota or that this man is a Zakein Mamre. Tosa says at this point in time we don't need a Beis Din anymore, because they've already determined that the evidence is in that this woman is a Sota, this man is a Zakein Mamre. Automatically she becomes a Sota, he becomes a Zakein Mamre. I don't need a Gmar Din through Beis Din, says Tosis. That's why those two cases of Sota and Zakein Mamre were omitted from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is exclusive, is dedicated exclusively to those cases where we need the Beis Din for what? Not only for evidence, but also for Gmar Din. Is Memela, we now can understand why the Mishnah missed the Darvish Be'erva, because the Darvish Be'erva does not require Beis Din for a Gemar Din. We only need the Beis Din to receive the Edim, and the rest is automatic.
Maybe just leave, but we're not expecting the Beis Din has to announce about a woman she's Sultan yet, or is an announcement and a Gemar Din not the same thing? Or is there no need for an announcement to say this woman is a Sultan?
Well, let me think. You need hachroz, you need announcement for the purpose of kohanim, right? So let's say, in the case of a grusha, so the Beis Din has to make an announcement and publicize that she's a grusha, lest the kohen might want to marry her.
Right.
Now, in the case of a sota, you have to know what the dinim are. I mean, if she gets blown up, I don't think we need any announcement to that, although I'm sure it's going to be splashed on the front pages of the newspaper. If she doesn't get blown up, then if I remember correctly, she resumes her marriage relationship. Now, would a Kohen, if her husband dies, be allowed to marry her? My assumption is yes. She had one issues. The Kinyan and Stira and so forth does not undermine her status as an Eishes Ish. And until she drinks from the Meimorarim, she cannot resume her relationship with her husband. But once she drinks, then she can go back to her husband. I think the Gemara even says that she'll have a special brach. If she never had any children, she'll have children. So from that perspective, although there was a chop, there was some sort of period of time in which they couldn't have relations, but once we pass that period and she successfully proved herself to be innocent, then we can resume the same Isha's relationship. So again, unless you know otherwise, that's my premise. So I don't think there would be any room here for Achraza. Because we might have shot, either she's gone already, and then the only Achraza is for the Chevra Kadisha to bury her. Or she survived it, and then she just resumes her marriage relationship. Okay, now the Mishnah says that Dine Gzelos require three judges. So what is the case of Gzela? So Rashi gives us two cases of Gzela. The classic case of Gzela is when Reuven sticks his hand into Shimon's pocket and he steals something. Or Reuven takes a gun and points it at Shimon's head and says, your money or your life. Alright, so that's Gzela. That's a Gazla. We'll have another discussion about what's called a Gadav. That's a burglar. We're not talking about burglary now. So in the case of a Gazla, we need three witnesses. So let's say Reuven takes Shimon into Bezin and he accuses Shimon of stealing something. He needs witnesses, etc., etc. And a final Gmar Din of a Bezin that's made up of how many judges? Of three judges. And that's called Dine Gzelos. Now Rashi is another case of Gzela. And we'll read the Rashi inside. Rashi says, Kofer Bipikodom Vishalach Bo Yah.
What you mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah. So Reuven gives Shimon a shepsela, a little sheep, and then Shimon rides on the sheep, or whatever he does with the sheep, he shears its wool, and then he denies that he ever got the sheep. He says it's mine since Sheish's main priest. Two witnesses testify against Shimon that this sheep really belonged to Reuven. It was only given to Shimon as a deposit. And now we have to judge Shimon under the law of Gzela. So what makes Shimon, in the case of a Shomer Shalach Yavaya, what makes him into a Gazla? He didn't steal anything. He just refuses to return something that belongs to Reuven. So Rashi says that if you have A plus B, number one, he denies, the Shimon, the Shomer, denies ever getting the object. He says it's mine from the 6 days of creation. And B, he shaleach bo yad, he uses it for his own benefit. He rides the horse. That's called shaleach yad b'pikadon. He's like demonstrating it's my horse and I can use it whenever I want. A Shomer is not allowed to use the object of that's being deposited in his possession. So Rashi says in such a case, he becomes a Gazla.
Because it's claim of ownership, which is not yours, and you're using it.
Correct, it's both together. Mm-hmm. The denial that it was given to you from, you know, that Reuven deposited in your possession. Number two, the fact that you use the object. Mm-hmm. Pirush Rashi, Gzelos, Kofer b'pikadon, Demi Sheshalach Bo Yad, Havi Gazlan. In other words, someone who refuses to return a pikadon. How do you say in English a pikadon?
Deposit.
A deposit. And not only does he refuse to return it, he treats the object like it's his. He demonstrates that by using the object. So Rashi says, to be shesholach bo yad, as soon as he uses the object, havi gazla.
He's a thief.
Rashi calls him a thief.
Right.
I wouldn't have called him a thief. I'll tell you why in just a minute. Because who is a thief? What is a thief? The next part of Rashi says, "V'chein hachotef miyad chaveru." That's a classic Gazlan. I steal something from your possession. Kigon vayigzal asachanis miyad amitzri. I forget where that is. I think it's in Shoftim, maybe somewhere in Tanakh. Maybe in here it tells you. Or it doesn't tell you. Okay, fine. So if I take something out of your hands, out of your possession, I'm a Gazla. That's a classic Gzela. Avalova velo shilem. Let's say he borrowed money and he didn't repay the money. Lo mikri Gazla. That's not called a Gazla. That comes under the general halach of Dini Mominus. When Reuven sues Shimon in court, he says, well, I lent you $100 and you never returned it. That's Dini Mominus. That's not called Gzela. Why? The milvelot son didn't.
You're allowed to use it.
Correct. That means when Shimon receives $100 as a loan from Reuven, he's meant to use the money. Now he owes a chov, but that's not gzela. Gzela is when you steal an object. So basically, Rashi says that there are three cases that Rashi mentions that he enumerates. In two out of the three cases, Rashi calls him a gazlan, and in one case, Rashi says that's just general dini mamonos. I'm demanding a chov. You owe me you have an outstanding debt. You haven't paid me up. And even though you're not a gazlan, it doesn't come under gzelos, obviously, but it does come under dini mamonos. I have a right to get compensated for the money that I lent you. So for example, you can owe someone money for any number of reasons. For one reason could be because you borrowed that money. That's called a loan. Another reason is possibly because you damaged something and you have to pay damages. That's called a mazik. What else? Let's say...
for safekeeping.
Oh, so we'll get to that. That's going to be the deposit case, which Rashi classifies as gzela. I'm just looking for cases where there is no gzela, but you owe someone money. Either you borrowed money, or for example, you destroyed his possessions, and therefore you have to pay compensation as a mazik. In fancy English, that's called tort law, if you've ever heard of it. So that also comes under didi mominis. I'm basically suing you for damages. But you never stole anything. So that doesn't come under gzeilus.
You also owe someone money which is connected to a betrothal, like a marriage?
Okay, that might be a chov. I don't know exactly what the case is. Yeah. I read him kudeshously, and then he says, I'll give you a 100 dinar for the marriage. He only gave him 99, so the last dinar is a chov. Okay. So that's so what is gzela? So Rashi gives two scenarios of gzela. One is classic. He takes something out of his friend's possession. He rips it out of his hand. And then we have another case which is very sophisticated. Rashi says he has a deposit and he claims it's his, and then he goes ahead and he uses it, which is called Sholeach Yad Bepikon. He's also a Gaza.
That's not a chov anymore, that's a gzela.
Yeah, because the object was given to him almanas la'achzir, that's for purposes of, it's a safe deposit. You know, give it back to me. So if he denies giving it back to him, that's not really gzela. Oh, but the answer is, says Rashi, he was Sholeach Yad. It's bad enough that he denied that it was given to him as a deposit, but moreover, he uses the object. When he uses the object, he becomes a Sholeach Yad and he's a Gazan. So we want to learn the Gvuras Yitzchak on this Rashi.
So wait, Rebbe, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
So somebody comes along and gives you a call and leaves it in your garage and you drive it around. It's a gazer.
Well, I'm not sure, because Rashi seems to have two conditions that make him to gazer. Number one, he has to be kofir b'pikado. He has to say in front of Bez that car was mine.
Ah, I see what you're saying. Right.
And number two, he uses the car. So it could be, according to Rashi, and that's what I think this essay is going to be about, if you only had one of those two variables, either he was just kofir b'pikado or he's just sholeach yad b'pikado without being kofir, he would not be a gazlan. You need A plus B.
There's a different case in Pikadon.
Moshe, do me a favor. If you want to do me a favor, get me some water to drink.
There's a different case of Pikadon. It's classic. What Brian says, if you get a Pikadon and you use it, you're not allowed to use it, and there's a damage to it, so it's to pay. But it also appears, I guess, in DNA.
All right, so the case of damages, and we might be able to tackle that. But life is complicated alone, even without damage. It's just the fact that the shomer uses the object, denies that it's his, you know, the mafkid, that makes him into a gazan. Mm. So we're on the left column here, Vehine Mirashi, on the second line. Nireh, the kofer b'pikadon lo mikri gazlan. What, you know, the fact that he denies that this sheep is, or this horse is belongs to the mafkid, that doesn't make him a gazlan. But v'dafkim sholach bo yad b'pikado mikri gazlan. So you need that second condition, namely that he was sholach yad b'pikado. Brachat adin yoyin v'chalom shakol
niyavivah. Amen.
V'tzarech biur. Rashi seems to be contradicted by a sugya at the end of Masechta Bava Kama, Omer Rav Sheshes, Hakofer Bipikonon, Nasalov Gana. Now, from the language of, or the statement of Rav Sheshes, what conclusion do you derive? How many conditions does Rav Sheshes set in order for the Shomer to become a Gazlan?
One.
Only one. All he says is Kofer B'Pikado. He doesn't whisper a word about Shaleach Yad. So what's going on over here? Now, what's the significance of making this Shomer into a Gazlan? A Shomer is only responsible for negligence that causes the loss of the object. So, for example, if a Shomer didn't lock up the object in a pen, and he left it off Hefker, and then the Gazlan came and stole it, the Shomer is responsible. But if something happens that's beyond his control, for example, an ones, the animal gets hit by lightning, so that's not something that you could expect the Shomer to have protected, so there's no element of negligence here. In such a case, the Shomer doesn't pay, unless he's a Gazlan. So what happens in the following scenario? He comes to Beis Din, the Shomer, and he denies that this horse belongs to Reuven the Mafkid. Shimon says, it's mine. I inherited it from Belshazzar, you know, from one of my grandparents. Then, after that denial, when he was kofer b'kadon, the lightning struck, and the horse died. Under the laws of Shomer, it's circumstances beyond his control, it's called onsim. A Shomer is not chayev for onsim. He's going to be chayev. Why is he going to be chayev? That's the statement of Rav Sheshes, because the moment he was kofer b'kadon, and he came to Beis Din denying that this horse belongs to Reuven, and he claimed that this horse was his, at that moment he becomes a Gazlan. Here's the difference between a Shomer and a Gazlan. A Shomer is chai for pshia, for negligence, but he's not chai for onsim. A Gazlan is chai even for onsim. And the reason for that, I once heard from my Rebbe, is because a Gazlan, and this is very paradoxical, but he has kinyanim. He actually, to some extent, owns the object. The Torah says he has to return it. But right now it's his. And if it's his, then he has to suffer the consequences of onus. For example, if I own a horse, and the horse drops dead, can I sue anyone for damages? I have to suffer that loss because I'm a bailim. A Gazlan is a bailim, and he's chayef for onus. So now we have a case of a shomer that's chayef for onus. So I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night, chayim, and I'm going to ask you, when is a shomer chai for onsim? And what's going to be your answer?
The shomer is kofer b'pikadon.
Excellent. That he was kofer b'pikadon. He came into Beis Din, he denied that he got this horse from... What?
He lied.
He lied in Beis Din. And then after he lied in Beis Din, the animal dropped dead. He has to pay for that because he's a Gazlan.
I thought he lied. He has to pay now.
So you see, Rabbo said that whether you call someone a shomer or a Gazlan, it's not just words. There's a nafkamina, a consequence. If you call him a shomer, he's not chayef for onsim. If you call him a Gazlan, he'll be chayef for onsim. But Rav Sheshes indicates, at what point does he become a Gazlan? When he was kofer b'pikadon. Did Rav Sheshes add another stipulation that he was sholeach yad b'pikadon?
That's not, the first is sufficient.
Doesn't mention anything about sholeach yad b'pikadon. He says, right, Hare Kofer v'pikada mikri gazan afilu lo shalach b'yod, against Rashi. V'yod sarach b'yod, mashikos of Rashi, the kofer v'pikada navi gazan mishalach b'yod, d'im shalach b'yod, tebegle davi gazan afilu lo kofer v'pikada. In other words, not only is Rashi difficult because he requires kofer v'pikada, but moreover, we don't understand why Rashi needs kofer b'pikadon, right? So again, on one end, we don't understand why Rashi needs sholeach yad, because kofer b'pikadon, according to Rav Sheshes, is enough to make him into a Gazlan. On the other hand, I don't understand why Rashi needs why Rashi needs to say that he was kofer b'pikadon if he was sholeach yad b'pikadon. Shlichas yad b'pikadon is in and of itself is sufficient to make him into a gazlan. And he quotes the Rambam in Perek Yud of his Gzeila. The Rambam says, "Asholeach yad b'pikadon reize gazlan." So we see clearly from the Rambam that in the case of Shlichus Yad, he becomes a gazlan. That's clear from the Rambam. So why then does Rashi need to add kofer b'pikadon?
I think it answers my question. If you are shomer of someone's deposit and you shulech, yeah, that's enough to make if something happens. You have to pay up, right?
Even if something happens beyond your control, because the gazan is chayv and onsen. So basically, to summarize the problem here that the Gvuras Yitzchak is attacking Rashi has two conditions, and they both have to be fulfilled in order to make him into a gazlan. The shomer has to be kofer b'kodem. Number two, he has to be shulech yad. We have two proofs that generate the following conclusions, that either one of those two conditions can make him into a gazlan. While the kofer b'kodem, Rav Sheshi says, and Bavakam makes him into a gazlan, or shulech yad b'kodem, the Rambam says, makes him into a gazlan. But why does Rashi need both conditions? Okay. Now, we want to learn a sugya at the beginning of Bava Kama. The Mishnah at the beginning of Bava Kama enumerates four avos nezikin. However, the Gemara quotes a brisa that there are as many as 24 avos nezikin. And the Gemara enumerates all those 24 avos nezikin, and on the list is Ganav v'Gazlan. That's according to Rabbi Chia. There's another brisa that has another calculation of I don't remember right now how many different calculations, how many of us there are. In any event, the Gemara says that if you count the number Hare Tlesar, you get to 13. And Rabbi Chia jacks it up from 13 to 24. He comes up with another 11 cases. Rabbi Oshia, my time alotani hani, why does he have a smaller number? He only has 13. Why isn't he willing to jack it up to 24 like Rabbi Chia? And the Gemara answers, lotani hani, Haktonile Shomerchinam Vehashoel. In other words, there's no need from Rabbi Oshia's perspective to mention Ganav and Gazlan because they're included on the Shomerchinam and Shoel. Rashi says, how do you include Ganav and Gazlan on the Shomerchinam and Shoel? The Hosam Nami Shayach Gneva. Because in those cases, you could have gneva. How so? Kigon shetoan tainas nignava heimenu. Varehi biyada. So the shomer says that the object was stolen, and that's a bluff. That's a fabrication. In truth, the shomer has packed away the object up in his attic. He's locking it up. Yamrina beperik meruba daf samak gimel amid beis the toing tanis ganov ki ganov. Now here we have an interesting case. We're not talking about a case of shaleach yad b'pikadon. We're not talking about a case where the shomer denies that he ever got the object, but rather we're talking about a case where he admits that he got the object, but he claims that the object was stolen from him. That's called toin tainas ganav v'pikodon.
Now we're talking about the Ganav, right?
No, we're talking about a Shomer, but the Shomer is claiming that the reason why he's exempt from any payment, any liability, is because it was stolen from him.
Okay.
You want to get back your object, go after the Ganav.
So he has to prove that.
Who has to prove it?
The Shomer.
Well, no, I think in this case the Shomer just has to take a shvua. He has to take an oath. He doesn't have to deduce any proof. Oh, so Rashi says that in this case the Shomer becomes a ganav. Why? Because he was towing Tainus ganav. Vamrida v'perik meruba, the toein tainus ganav ki ganav. You should underline that, right? That if he claims that it was stolen, he himself becomes a thief. The toein tainus gazlan ki gazlan. Wait a minute. What are we establishing here based on the Gemara Meruba? What did the Shomer claim? That it was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Once he claims it was stolen, he has the same status as a Goslin, because he's lying through his teeth. It was not stolen. He's the one who stole the object. So the Gemara says, Rav Chia Nami, Hotoni Le, he already has Ganav and Ganav in Shomer Chino and Shoel. So why does Rav Chia need not only Shomer, but he also needs Toeng, he also needs Ganav the Gazlan? After all, Shomer himself could be a Gazlan.
Mm-hmm.
So Gemara answers, Tani Mamona di Asal Yadei Vehetereva, Tani Mamona di Asal Yadei Visura. Right, there are two ways you could become a Gazlan, or Ganav. One is where you steal it. How did it come into your possession? Illegally. The other is where Asili Yodabet Tera, it was given to you as a pikadon, as a deposit, to watch it and protect it. That's called Asili Yodabet Tera. Pirush Rashi, Shomer Chinom, Afal Gavda Hashta Toin Tainas Ganov. But nevertheless, he wasn't a Ganov from the beginning, right? How did he get possession of the object? It was given to him, Rabbi Osa. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he took it and he absconded with it and he's pickpocketed. He actually received it. So that's a new category, and that's called Asal Yada Beheterah. It came into his possession, Beheter. What's Ganav and Gazlan? That's case of Mamona de Asal Yada Bisura. So that's the Gemara in Perek Meruba. Hamavuar, Harei Mavu, the Gemara, to the Ganav of Gazlan, having rak kisha asa liyado beisura. I will call sha asa liyado vetera lo chashiv Gazlan. Oh, the toin tainis Ganav the pikanon. We're here on page 2, days. But Toin Tainus Gazlan came into Lo Asal Yada Bisura Lo Havi V'Chlal Ganav V'Gazlan the Kol HaTorah. So it's interesting. We have two categories of a Gazlan. We have a Gazlan who steals something that's called Asal Yada Bisura, and now we have a Gazlan who put forward a claim, a fabricated claim of Gazlan, as if to say the object was stolen. So in such a case, even though the object came into his possession Behetera, he still has the status of a Gazlan, and that's a special halacha in Shomer that Toin Tainus Ganav makes him into a Ganav. Now you remember that in the previous paragraph he had presented Rav Baruch Ber. Here also he's presenting Rav Baruch Ber in the name of Rav Chaim. So another case of a quote of the Rav Baruch Ber in the name of Rav Chaim. The Gneva de Toin Tainus Ganav Havi Gneva Mechudeshes. It's a brand new category of Gzela, of Gneva. So Rav Baruch Ber explains what his Rebbe meant. And he says the following: the gneva who dafkal yedei to be sura asul yade. I will toin tainis ganov. Harebe tera asul yade. The leker gneva. El digzeres hakosuf who shetehezu gneva and toin tainis ganov. So Reb Chaim is claiming that this concept of gzneva here is mechudeshes. It's brand new. It doesn't fit into the normal pattern of gneva where you steal something from someone. Here it was be'etera asul yado, and then he was towing tadis ganav. He tried to get it off the hook. I'm not responsible because it was a ganav who stole it. V'nira. Dehu din b'shomrim. This is one of the various unique aspects of shomrim, that there is gneva, even when it was beheteira asil yada. The Torah says that because he was towing tainis ganav, he becomes a ganav. The taina itself makes him into a ganav. B'nira dehu adin b'shomrim. The gzeres hakosuv the al yedei din shomrim the chiyuv shomrim shechalale nasa ganav al yedei tainas ganav. What does he mean to who adin b'shomrim? I mean, that's what we were. So the gneva toin tainas ganav who adin b'shomrim the al yedei din shomrim the chiyuv shomrim chalale nasa ganav. Al yedei tainas ganav. The only word I don't understand here is hu adin. I don't know what he means by hu adin. I mean, that's exactly the case that we were discussing. Oh, v'nira dekmochein b'kishekofer b'pikadon is kevin b'etera asu liyod aleka gzela v'rak gzera sakoshetia zu gzela kishekofer b'pikadon. So we have two cases in Shomrim where the Shomer assumes the status of a Gazlan, even though it was Beter as the other. Case number one is Toin Tainis Ganav, and case number two is Kofer B'Pikadon. And the common denominator of both these cases is that now he's chayav in onsim, even though a shomer is potter from onsim, but now he's chayav in onsim because he took on the status of a gazlan. And he's a gazlan even though it was be'heteira os liyodah.
That's a chidush, because usually it's only bisura.
Exactly. It's not a classic gazlan. It's a new gazlan in the parsha of shomer. It only applies to a shomer. So let's say if you lent me 1,000, I deny that you ever lent me 1,000. Mm-hmm. Okay, we need evidence. You have to bring two Adam to testify and substantiate your claim that you lent me 1,000. But if I deny that I got the 1,000, that doesn't make me a gazlan. Even though I'm kofer be halva. No.
That's not your gazlan.
What do you say?
By your action, you're a gazlan. I come along and I say to you, Rabbi, yes, $1,000. I'm not sure about
you. Okay.
I come along to Shimon and I say, Shimon, listen, yes,
to Shimon. Let's use Shimon, so we always know Shimon is the accused, you know. As the French say, Jacques, right?
I say to Shimon, here's $1,000. And Shimon goes and takes that money. And goes and buys a call, goes and invests.
And then he denies that he ever got the money.
And then he denies that he got the money. He's lost the money because of a bad investment or a bad call, whatever it was.
And then he denies the whole story.
He denies the whole story, but by his actions, he's a person.
So the answer is, but it was behetera asil yadeh.
He started off being a shomer.
Well, actually, you know, we have to add another element to this question. Not only is behetera asil yadeh, there's even a more fundamental reason why he's not a gazlan. What's that?
So is this denial of halva or pikadon? Because there's a difference, right?
Right. No. That's the case. Brian is talking about the case of halva.
Oh.
So I'm trying.
A person comes along to me and says, "Listen, I'm going overseas. I've got this $2,000 that I want to leave it in my apartment. look after the two.
Well, that's a deposit.
Right. I said, I've got this money, $2,000. Just look after it. I'll be back in 2 months' time. I'm coming back from the States or whatever it is. And meanwhile, I've had this $2,000 and I've been dying to invest in this product. Again, I invest in the product. Right? The product turns out to be a dud. Right? We lose everything. Then the guy comes back and he says,
where's my money?
Where's my money? And he said, we what money? I say what money is, denying that I deposited the money.
He's a guzzler.
He's a guzzler.
But the first case, where he got the money as a halva,
was a bit different.
As a loan, then he's not a guzzler.
No, I understand.
Why? Because they build a lot of sudden.
Do whatever you want to the money, but in 4 months' time, I want the money back when I come back from overseas.
Correct.
There's a difference. But, or somebody comes along and it happens often.
Yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
I'm saying what happens.
Understood. Al-Lokha just has to address the question, is he a Gazlan or is he not a Gazlan?
He's a Gazlan. The Swiss banks were Gazlan into the
Why is the different? Because one of them is Betera, isn't it?
No, they're both Betera Asiliyada, whether it's a Pikadon or it's Alva. But in the case of Alva, we have a principle called Milvalo Tzadnitna, which means that the Malva never gets back his money. So all the Malva has is a claim of a Chov. You can't steal a Chov. A Chov is something abstract. Gneva, Gzela, only applies to a Be'en. Be'en means a physical, concrete, tangible object. So in the case of a Pikadon, there's a physical object, I want it back. If you don't give it back to me, you're a Gazlan. Yeah. And not only that, you become a Gazlan even though it was Behetera Asuliyot. And here we have a Gzeres HaKosov in two scenarios, that the Shomer becomes a Gazlan despite the fact that it was Behetera Asuliyot. A, because he denies that he ever got the Pikadon, or B, if he says it was stolen. If it was stolen and he fabricated that lie, then he becomes the gun. He's the thief.
He's a gun.
That's what we have so far.
So the guy's in the bank and they're standing there, two guys. And the robber's coming to the bank and the one says to his mate, he says, remember the $1,000 I owed you? Here it is.
So I've also, where do we get up to? I lost the text here. Just one second.
We finished the first paragraph of Daf Bet.
So we're up to Vehine. So in Shulchan Aruch it says the following: Tavo hapikadon. So Reuben says, "Give me back the sheep that I the horse that I deposited." The kofar bo, and Shimon denies it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, miyad nasal of gazlan v'chay ba'onsim. Immediately when he denies that he got the pikadon. And then Edom are going to testify that he indeed was holding on to the horse of Reuven. He becomes a Gazlan. If the horse gets hit by lightning, then he has to pay damage. He has to pay as a Gazlan. So now, on the Shulchan Aruch, there's something called Hagos Rabbi Kiveg. Comments from Rabbi Kiveg.
How can he be held liable if the lightning hits the horse and the horse dies?
That's the din of a gazlan, and my Rebbe used to say that a gazlan is considered like a bialin. The Torah says it's like it's yours. And if you own something and it gets hit by lightning, you have to suffer that loss. Says Rebbe Kivega, mikomakom lo poka mimenu chiv shomrim. Wow, listen to this. Here's a chiddush of Rebbe Kivega. A person could be both a gazlan and a shomer at one and the same time. Wow. Now, obviously, once he's a gazlan, he's chai for onsim. So who cares whether he's a shomer or not? Nafkemina im achre shekofar nisyaker uposha bo shenevat. Watch what happens in this case. The man receives an object. It's worth 10. He denies that he ever got it. Then the object went up in price. He has to pay the higher price if the object is destroyed. Why? Because he's a shomer. And a shomer pays at the moment that the object is destroyed, and that moment we have to look at its value. It went up in value. It could be 200%, 300%, I don't care what. It went up 1 to 1,000. He's going to have to pay the 1,000. If he was only a gazlan, we have a principle that a gazlan pays kishas hagzela. And that also reflects the fact that there's something called Kinyani Gzela, that he acquires it at that point. And that's the point at which he becomes obligated in Hashavah. He has to pay that price. So he only plays one. But now that he received the object as a shomer, and he denied that he received it as a shomer, he becomes a ganav, says Rabbi Kivega, but he's also shomer at the same time. And in this case, so it's always going to work against him. If the object goes down in value, he's going to have to pay the higher value at the time that he denied that he got the pikadon because he's a gazlan. If on the other hand it goes up in value, then he's going to have to pay the higher value because he's a shomer. So he's wearing two hats. The mitzad gazlan lo mishalim elikishas akzela. Dainu shas kfira shahaya bizal. It was less. It was cheap. But mitam shomer chayev kishas apshia for the later price when it went up in value. Zulas be ones. What is this? The banu lechayvo rak midin gazlan. Is misham kshas hakfir. Okay. That's a little more complicated. We'll skip that for the time being because we have to dab Meiriv soon.
It's about 9:30.
It is ready at 9:30. Yeah. My watch says 9:25.
You got 5 minutes. Yeah.
So let's not rob 5 minutes because then you're a guy. So then you're going to have to. Yeah.
My watch says 2 minutes to.
All right. Now, what do we get from this Rabbi Kivega for our purposes? Are we Kosav Rabbi Kivega? The after kovr pikadon asa gazlan lo paka minei chiyuv shomrim. He doesn't shed. We don't strip him of his status as a shomer. He remains not only a gazlan but also a shomer. The ilu b'sholeach yad b'pikadon kasa b'tosus Rabbi Kivega. That's a different work of Rabbi Kivega. The same person but a different. In Bav Metzia Per Gimel Mishnah Yud Beis he writes the kevin the nasa gazlan. When he is sholeach yad b'pikadon, he becomes a gazlan. He's no longer a shomer. He removes his status as a shomer. Therefore, it went up in value after he was sholeach bo yad. Because shlichus yad was the action of gzela, and kol gazlan mishalim kshas gzela. He's a shomer. Let him pay the high value if it goes up in value after he was sholeach yad, after he rode the horse. Then he's not a shomer because his status as a gazlan replaces and removes his status as a shomer. He's no longer a shomer. So we have two cases, and the halach is different. In the case where he was towing tainus ganov, where he's kofer b'pikadon, then he doesn't lose his status as a shomer. He gains, so to speak, an additional status as a gazlan. And he's chayv for onsen. But at the same time, he'll be chayv if the object goes up in value as a shomer. But in the case of sholeach yad b'pikadon, that's considered an act of gzela, and it removes his status as a shomer. So if it goes up in value, he doesn't have to pay the increment. He only pays kishas shlichus yad b'pikadon. Ubir adavar. The Rambam in Perek Gimel Ches Gzeila Kosav De Sholeach Yad Pikon Harei Ze Gazlan Vinis Chaya Bion Simen Asak Gzeila Bishusa Kedin Kol HaGazlanim Ulo Malach Yedalit Shom Kosav Arama Kofer Bipikonim Bibezdin Im Hoya Bishusa Bishosha Kofar Nasa Olav Gazlan. So basically he's saying that according to Rabbi Kivega, only in the case of Shlichus Yad Pikadon, where the Rambam says he takes it into his Rishus by using it, that's really real bona fide Gzela, then he's Pakamimenu shomer. He can't be a chayiv as a shomer if it now belongs to him. He took it in his rishus. But in the case of kof bikadon, he's not. It's not gzeil b'rishuso. He doesn't take possession of the object. He's called a gazlan as far as the chiyuv owns him is concerned. But at the same time, he remains a shomer, and he's chayiv as a shomer. And if therefore if it goes up in value, he's going to be mishalim kishasa p'shia. So here's where we want to take a break.
Rabbi,
at the paragraph that starts with
him. Isn't it a bit counterintuitive? Not only the fact that if you are in the case of Dafka Sholeach Yad, where you actually do something, but also that the mere fact what you said, that in the case of someone who's a Gazlan, he pays the original price, another thing, because you're a Gazlan, you do something, wouldn't you expect someone to pay a higher price now? Because to enter Mat Ganam and Kufar Pikadon, there's also bad things, but when you sholeach yad, you actually do something.
I'll tell you something amazing. If a gazlan steals sheep and the sheep gives birth to a vlad, that vlad is owned by the gazlan. So if you're looking for paradoxes, there's a paradox for you, because that's called kinyani gzela. It's a mind-boggling concept. That that theoretically Reuben could steal something from Shimon and now he owns it. And he owns it means that he doesn't have to pay anything that goes beyond the moment that he acquired ownership. He's going to have to pay for onsim. But it could very well be that if there are profits that accrue from this, it belongs to him, it accrues to him. All right, we'll stop here.